Can we then move to the next item, which is the presentation by the Office of the Auditor General? Before we start, let us apologize for the delay. We hope that you understand that there was intense engagement that we couldn't stop. Luckily, the Financial Fiscal Commission is not going to come, so we have enough time to engage with them. Okay. Thank you. Can you then proceed?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'd just like to introduce my team. My name is Ahmed Mullah, I'm responsible for the audit. On my left is Malika Khurnawat, who's on the audit, and Tsekho Mahuma next to her, and Mr. Ali next to her. Chairperson, there was no need to apologize. We'd actually appreciate the opportunity to present the audit outcomes for the National Department, the Small Business Development Department, for the year ended 31st March 2017. Our role here today is to assist you in your oversight responsibility, and my understanding is that there's a report you need to prepare by next week Friday, the BRRR report. I'll give you some information on the audit that we performed at the Department of Small Business and at CEDA, the Small Enterprise Development Agency. Primarily, the functions of the Auditor General is to audit the financial statements, and express an opinion on the fair presentation of the financial statements. But we go to another level where we actually look at your performance information also, or the reports against predetermined objectives. And we don't actually express an opinion there, but we report our factual findings in this regard. So any material findings with regards to performance information, we report that in the audit report also. And the third part of the audit report talks about compliance with key legislation on financial and performance management. So this is the three different elements that we look at during the audit of a department and public entity. There's numerous audit opinions, and the AG categorizes them into different parts. And the first one is the best one, and that's why it's green there. It's an unqualified opinion with no findings, also referred to as a clean audit. Basically, in that is the best outcome, the best audit outcome. It's the audit outcome you want to see in your portfolio. And then you have financially unqualified what findings on compliance and or predetermined objectives. So the financial statements are fairly presented. However, there are some findings, some material findings in the areas of compliance or in the areas of performance information. Fortunately, your portfolio doesn't have any qualifications or adverse opinions or disclaimed audit opinions. However, these slides do explain what these are. Ultimately, the audit outcomes in the portfolio have regressed year on year. So if you look at the first chart, or the first graph on the left, on my left, you will see 2016-17 is mustard or yellow. You ultimately want to see that green. The previous year, CEDA had a clean audit, but regressed into unqualified what finding. So they had a finding with regards to compliance with legislation. In the second graph, talks about compliance with legislation. The first one was the overall audit outcome, and this one is specific to compliance with legislation. Unfortunately, it's an area of concern, and it's something that needs to be addressed, and effort is required to address this. I mean, now, if you compare it over a three-year period, CEDA obtained a clean audit in 15-16 also, last year in 15-16, but in 14-15 it had findings on compliance with legislation. Last year, Small Business had findings on compliance with legislation. This year, both of them have findings on compliance with legislation. At Small Business, we reported material non-compliance over transfers. This is specifically with regards to the incentive schemes, and this was due to inadequate monitoring and approval processes over these incentives. We'll go into the detail a bit later. At CEDA, we reported material non-compliance on supply chain management, as there was a payment or the appointment of one contractor which was not in accordance with the procurement prescripts. The last one is the last graph. It splits it up into our report on the annual, or our our findings on the annual performance report. When we audit the annual performance report, we look at it from two perspectives, in two perspectives. The first one is usefulness, and the second one is reliability. Usefulness assessment is where we look at the indicators and the targets and determine if those have been, are they prepared in terms of the guidelines specified by National Treasury. Basically, if your indicators are well defined and if your targets are smart, and if you reported, and if it's prepared in terms of those frameworks, for instance, annual performance plan must have indicators, measures, objectives, and all of these things, and that if it's prepared consistently between reporting and planning documents. So in terms of usefulness, there was no issues in the portfolio this year. In terms of reliability, there wasn't any issues in the portfolio again. However, the department's annual performance report was had misstatements in it when it was provided for audit. These misstatements were subsequently corrected, so there were no material findings which were included in the audit report. So the concern in this area, when it comes to annual performance reporting, is rather the controls over the completeness and accuracy of the performance report when submitted for audit. So that needs to be enhanced at the department. So to improve the audit outcome, attention needs to be paid to the key controls or the status of key controls. And we break out the key controls into different elements, and it's broken up into leadership, financial and performance management, and governance. If we look at it, most of it is either concerning or good at CEDA and at small business, mostly good at CEDA, and some areas are concerning at the Department of Small Business. And this relates to the audit finding, where the incentive scheme guidelines need now to be amended to ensure that there is extensive monitoring and evaluation of the transfers made. These are specific transfers over those incentives, the BBSDP and the CIS. Also, attention needs to be paid to the reviewing of performance reports, and effective steps were not taken at CEDA to ensure compliance with supply chain management legislation. And from a principal perspective, effective leadership, if you look at that graph on my left, effective leadership means the tone at the top, the tone that management is setting, leadership at the department is setting. There were no concerns in those areas. Oversight responsibility is the role that leadership, the DG, the DDGs, chief directors, the CEO, the board, etc., the role that they play to make sure that there's compliance with legislation, that the performance reports are complete and the performance reports are accurate, and that the financial statements are also complete and accurate. Effective HR management clearly to ensure that the department and CEDA are capacitated well enough, that they have capacity, that they have staff, and these people who are working there are skilled enough. Policies and procedures, leadership also needs to ensure that there's direction and by the means of policies and procedures. Audit action plan is basically the key message that I'll leave you with today, in that there needs to be effective action plans to address the issues that we've raised in the past, especially the findings that we've raised in the last audit, not necessarily only the ones that were in the audit report, but those that were also in the management report. So it's very important that leadership, the DG, the DDGs, they follow up on these audit action plans, and that they ensure that the findings that we raised were resolved. Look, it might not necessarily be true to this portfolio, but from most of the portfolios that I've seen and the other one I deal with, the audit action plans, effective audit action plans, are the key to getting a clean audit. Because if you have, you know, after the audit is done, you know what the issues are, you know what the problems are, you maintain what you were doing right, and you address what we identified. So audit action plans might just be the key to getting a clean audit. So if these are effectively managed, if they're properly developed and implemented, I think a clean audit is definitely on the table. With regards to assurance provided by the different levels of assurance, senior management, accounting officers, mostly providing the right amount of assurance, senior management at both DSPD and CEDA, have assessed them as providing some assurance due to the findings that incurred, that were identified and reported on in the audit report. I think senior management can play a better role, can improve on what they're doing, and if they do that, the clean audit will definitely be there. We are required to assess the performance of the portfolio committee, and we've assessed it as providing assurance. We've assessed, looked at the reports and minutes of meetings and that from these portfolio committees. And I would say that assurance needs to be approved at the department, as internal control processes, performance reporting and compliance are in place, but they're not totally effective. So those need to be enhanced. This is quite an interesting slide, which specifies the total amount spent and budgeted by the department. It's an amount of about 1.3 billion that was budgeted for by the department in terms of the estimates of national expenditure. The department spent about 90% of this, close to 91%, which is about 1.1 billion rand. The department also planned about 38 targets and achieved 71% of these targets. So this is like a summary of your annual performance report. 71% of targets achieved, 90% of budget spent. It's also important to note that there were no material findings in the areas of the performance report in terms of those indicators and targets. Reliability-wise and usefulness-wise, there were no significant findings. If you look at the annual report of the department on pages 37 to 56 is where you can see the reasons, management have specified reasons for non-achievement or overachievement of targets. The key projects that we select as part of our audit was the incentives, the BBSDP and the corporate incentive scheme. And we've identified some issues, and those issues that we've identified resulted in us reporting that non-compliance in the audit report. And these concerns, there were concerns over the monitoring and approval processes over these schemes. There's in instances or the samples that we audited, mandatory documentation that was supposed to be included was not submitted for audit or was not in place. When in a handful of site visits that we did, we identified instances where suppliers were paid but no asset was delivered. There were concerns with the quotation submitted by the beneficiary. So when you apply for an incentive, with it you submit three quotations. And we identified concerns with these quotations. The quoted amounts from the suppliers after we contacted them were lower than the amounts quoted on the grant application. That means suppliers may have inflated the prices when quoting. Unsuccessful suppliers indicated they do not supply the goods included on the quotations. That means those are possibly falsified quotations. Quotations may have been falsified to achieve the mandatory three quotations. So the same preferred supplier has been used in some of these instances. Our summary on the key projects audited. So our work here resulted in that non-compliance that's reported in the audit report. The focus was on Program 3, like I mentioned earlier. If you look at Program 3, the budget versus the spending, this is the two incentives, the BBSDP and the CIF. The budget was in the region of 1.1 billion. 1 billion was spent. There were no material findings from a financial statement perspective. That means it's accounted for correctly in the financial statements. We did identify material non-compliance with Treasury Regulation 8.4.1 in terms of monitoring and evaluation over the incentives, and which I discussed earlier in slide 13. And they were, with regards to predetermined objectives, we did not raise any material findings in this regard. Findings with key on compliance with key legislation, material misstatements in submitted annual financial statements. What this means is, by the end of May, the department had to submit financial statements for audit purposes to me. These financial statements that were submitted to me by the department last year had misstatements, but this year we had no issues. So there's definitely an improvement with regards to the financial statements, financial statement preparation. Management of procurement and contracts was an issue last year at small business, but small business improved in that area. However, there was one contract that was not in accordance or wasn't procured in accordance with the supply chain prescripts at CEDA, so that remains the same. The transfer of funds is a new finding, which wasn't there last year, so it's a regression year on year. At both entities, at CEDA and small business, there were no concerns regarding the quality of the financial statements. There were a good set of financial statements that were submitted for audit purposes. regards to fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure. There was none incurred in the portfolio. About 92,000 rand of fruitless and wasteful expenditure at the department at CIRA, and this was due to interest paid on late receipts, due to late receipt of statements. And there was about 23 million rand of irregular expenditure which was incurred in at CIRA. A portion of that was for non-compliance with supply chain prescripts, but there was also overspending on the approved budget. There's a specific requirement in the PFMA and Treasury regulations that says that the public entity must spend within budget limits.
Yes,
so there was overspending of about 16 million. At CIRA, yeah. There were no material findings on consequence management in the portfolio. And the top two root causes, and I think I mentioned this already, is that there were slow responses by management and senior management. So it's about responding to findings. So last year, the issue might have not resulted in something that was escalated into an audit report, but it probably was in the management report. So if the findings that we identified were addressed, if management responds to these findings or responded to it in the past, it would normally won't result in an audit report finding. We've seen, and experience tells us that at audits which are clean, management on those audits, they respond almost immediately to any finding raised by the AG. I mean, within days they meet and they find solutions to these issues. So this is the key to getting a clean audit. I'll reiterate it. It's addressing what we identify and maintaining what you have. Instability of vacancies in key positions. Okay, it was the previous year issue, so it was resolved. So the main root cause is management not responding to findings from the AG. We don't have any specific commitments from the minister. We've proposed commitments to the portfolio committee in that they must request management to provide feedback on the implementation and the progress of action plans to address poor audit outcomes. It's also request management to provide quarterly feedback on the status of key controls, especially around the monitoring of the incentive schemes at the Department of Small Business. Also, the list of actions taken against transgressors must be provided quarterly to the portfolio committee for follow-up for all irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was incurred. There are other entities in the portfolio, but these are not, or this one is not audited by the AG, and this is the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, and they received a clean audit. The Auditor General has improved its on its audit methodology. It's a methodology which is the detailed manner in which we audit. And this methodology is more focused on auditing what's important and having better focused risk assessments. So better explained is that this new audit methodology asked me to focus on what was important to the department, and when we looked at it, and there were many different measures that were important, but we focused on those incentive schemes, and ultimately this then realized in a finding that was reported in the audit report. So that's what it can give you. The new methodology is a more relevant and valuable product, and we hope that's what we've provided. Our methodology was subject to numerous research, local and international discussions, and many hours of testing. Chairperson, the last slide talks to the correlation or the inverse relationship between accountability and corruption. And it talks about that corruption, how it manifests itself and can get worse if there's a lack of accountability. And we're saying that if there is accountability, if people are held accountable, if there's consequences for transgressors and people take accountability, then corruption would go down. Chairperson, in conclusion, that is our short presentation on the audit outcome for the portfolio. Clean audits are definitely possible at both the department and at the Small Enterprise Development Agency. There was only for each one of them one finding in the audit report, so it's very, very possible to get clean audits in the next 12 months, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
We will break for lunch. before it gets cold and then come back for discussion. Yeah, we'll break up until 2. An hour. Until 2. We are on 10 past.
We have only 15 minutes.
How much time do you need?
15 minutes.
30? 30
minutes.
Let's come back at 20:30. 20. Okay. Can we have lunch? Come back at 20:30. Thanks. Honorable Chance, followed by Honorable Lawotsi. Honorable Kruger will be joining us at a later stage. He had a family engagement to deal with. Thanks. Honorable Chance.
Thank you, Chair. Is it Muller, Mr. Muller? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Muller, for your presentation. Yeah, your presentation comes at a time when the audit profession is under scrutiny. And I'm not in any way, excuse me, trying to cast aspersions on the Auditor General's office. In fact, I think it's conducted itself with the utmost integrity so far. But it's clear that the procedures that are followed by auditing firms are themselves not immune to abuse through omission as much as commission. And I think it becomes pertinent to our discussion because of the findings that you've referred to in the case of CEDA and the department in terms of the transfers of incentives. Now, you're not particularly explicit in how you describe these errors or what you have found, but it's very explicit to us when we visit on our oversights numerous instances of where transfers of money result in total underperformance. So this then suggests that the Auditor General is focusing on my friend at the back here, Mr. Harris, who sits on the Parliamentary Audit Committee, refers to compliance as opposed to performance. And this is a problem for me. And I'm not trying to say that the audit profession should change its mandate. But when you have a situation where in the case of the cooperative incentive scheme, there's clear evidence that you referred to of non-conformance in suppliers being appointed. There is even greater evidence of that money going to waste. In fact, up to 90% of it going to waste. So could it not be then referred to as fruitless and wasteful expenditure if the audit asks a few more questions as to what happened to this money? Where did it go to? You know, was it adequately used by the recipients? And the same applies to CEFA. And I know that you didn't audit CEFA, but it does refer to its clean audit. I mean, I find it extraordinary that an organization that has an impairment rate of 47% can be given a clean audit. I mean, just think about that for a moment. 47% of its loans, of its entire loan book, is impaired. And it's even worse in its direct loan book. It's up to 70%. Now, how can an auditor give a clean audit to an organization where 70% of the money, taxpayers' money, is lent out to small businesses that don't pay it back? I just don't understand that. And I think this committee has got to take a stand on this. Because, again, it seems to me that the audit profession is glossing over appalling irregularities in our economy. not just where there is blatant corruption, but where there is absolute underperformance. So, Chair, I think that, as I said, this committee needs to be questioning the mandate of an audit. If it's not the job of the Auditor General, then whose job is it, actually, to hold government departments to account for disastrous performance? So, I know that we've asked the Auditor General, or at least we've asked the House Chair, to see if this committee can apply funds to the appointment of the Auditor General to carry on an audit of CIFA and the Cooperative Incentive Scheme. But on the basis of what we've been presented here, is that audit actually going to deliver anything? I'm not so sure that it is. So maybe you can just address this, Mr. Muller, and answer the question as to whether you think that the audit as conducted has actually gone into the questions that I raised, just to the extent that fruitless and wasteful expenditure is actually what we have seen within the entities that you have audited. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to the AG presentation. Yeah, my colleague's introduction about this auditing thing. As you know, big companies are debted by some faking things. So, but we're not casting aspersion to the AG. But the way we noticed a vast fruitless expenditure when we were busy with the oversights, out of all the oversights we conducted, 90% of the project funded by the government, what is in the books is not the reality what is happening. And we raised the concern even to the parliament. But we're very much surprised now the audit report 2016-17. It shows everything is very good in the department. If we didn't go to oversight, we were going to praise and clap hands to the department. Unfortunately, contrary to what we saw when we go outside, we don't know who was giving you the information to the department, whether they were giving you a relevant information, what is transpires in the provinces. Okay, on page 15 you about the compliance, you recorded that on the program 3 of the SMMEs and cooperatives design and support, you said there was material non-compliance with the Treasury regulation as a witness in terms of monitoring and evaluation. So I would like to more clarity explanation of that, how and on which approach on monitoring the SMEs or cooperatives, or the department is failing, or is the cooperatives who are not complying with this treasury regulation. Page 17, You said there was an irregular expenditure of 23 million rand. So with this big amount on 23 million, which is irregular expenditure. And the entire report is unqualified with some opinion. During the year 2016-17, page 17, maybe you will clear that to us. Page 18, on the fraud and consequence management. When we conducted on the same year which you audited, 2016-17, we went to Mpumalanga. We found that there is a lot of fraud activities there, which we even wrote to your office that we need an investigation, where we saw projects, poultry projects, a shadow work done with a lot of money. There is an abuse and fraud activity in the department in terms of the incentive scheme. That's what we saw. Then when you said there were no material findings on the consequences management about the fraud matters, yeah, we want to know more about that. Page 20. Page 20, when you are talking about the status of key commitments by the minister, on a comment down there, you said no minister commitments. So, can you explain more about that statement? To me, it's very vague and also too general and ambiguous. We have a minister and a deputy minister, which who are controlling the ministry. So when you said there is no minister commitment, can you talk more about that? It's page 20, Chairperson. Did you find the slide, Chairperson? Page 20. On the status of key commitments by the minister. I thought maybe you are hunting it today. Page 21. Yeah, that's my list. Yeah. Page 21. About this report, we understand the PAA section 44.3 that you are not auditing the entity. But we expect you as the custodian of auditing facilities or activities in the government to contact maybe the internal audits of those of the department and for the entity. Those entities, they have their own internal audit. Also to give you the light of what is happening to the entity. And here we only see the CIFA on this page 21. We can't see the CEDA's report. Even if you didn't audit them, we were expecting maybe to see also the CEDA because it's part of the department entity. But in a nutshell, Chairperson, as a committee, this report from the AG, to me, I'm it's very hard for me to swallow this tablet because there are so many things we saw and we heard when we were in oversight. We have the investigation approved here by Parliament within the department about the activity which is happening and mostly which happened on this financial year 2016-17. Thank you, Chairperson.
Give an opportunity for our Office of the Auditor General to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for those questions. I'll try to explain it the best I can. As the 2016-17 audit of the Department of Small Business was an audit which was focused on those incentives, on the BBSDB and the CIS. There was a lot of additional work that we did this year that we didn't normally do. And we scratched the surface. We got to the top and we started understanding the issues. If you look at slide 13, the finding in the audit report is based on non-compliance with Treasury Regulation 8.4.1. That regulation requires the department to exercise monitoring responsibilities over the transfer payment that's made. The payment of the incentive is nothing but a transfer payment. And because of the following, because of the monitoring and approval processes that weren't in place, mandatory documentation that wasn't in place, this is for the payment of a grant or for the payment of an incentive. Those incentives that were paid all over the country, including Mpumalanga, we raised concerns with questions with the quotations submitted by the beneficiaries. We raised concerns regarding falsified quotations. So because of all of these findings, it culminated into non-compliance or resulted in non-compliance with Treasury Regulation 8.4.1. So we say in the audit report that the department hasn't complied with 8.4.1. There weren't sufficient processes, monitoring in place to ensure that those incentives were used for their intended purposes. Okay? It started off there. What subsequently happened is the department has requested that an investigation take place into this. Now this is covering all the incentives paid or the incentives paid over the last two financial years, the 15-16 year and the 16-17 year. So because of this finding, we've opened up now the can of worms. We've identified where the concern is at the department. Primarily the department does this. It pays out those incentives. It's in the region of about R1 billion. It's in the region of about R1 billion of incentives that are paid out. So what will happen is, we've requested through the department, that the Auditor General perform an investigation into this, into the concerns that you are talking about also, and that covers Mpumalanga, because there were incentives paid, a lot of incentives paid in Mpumalanga also, so it will cover those incentives or those concerns also. So the investigation is going to be conducted into the incentives. These are just the risks that we've identified, and that investigation will be conducted. It is subject still to approval by the Auditor General himself. So we are in the processes of we have to follow a specific process, and we're following that at the moment. So that is what's regards to the incentive. So whereas last year it didn't feature at all in an audit report, this year it's featured, 16-17 financial year, the incentives and the concerns you're raising and the concerns that you've raised in your Mpumalanga site visit, those concerns will now be raised, they will now be investigated. So you've got a specialist audit team who specializes in performing investigations will now perform this work. Now, we are regulatory audit and our focus is on accounting compliance and predetermined objectives auditing. Now you have a team that specializes in this area of work and they will look into this the incentive audit. It's possible and it's highly possible that if there was any fraud, if there was any if there was anything which was done underhanded, that this could ultimately result in fruitless and wasteful expenditure / or irregular expenditure or unauthorized expenditure. It's once this investigation has been conducted, it's possible that they will be able to quantify the amount of fraud in this area, which then will still and can still be disclosed in the financial statements of later years. So the issue might have happened, or the fraud might have happened in 2000 and in the 16-17 financial year, but it will be quantified as irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure in years going forward in the 17-18 financial year. So it's a space that needs to be now watched and tracked. The investigation should uncover whatever concerns are. We have quite a good team that's going to deal with this here. So in a nutshell, we've identified the problem during a regulatory audit, and we've referred it now to, or we are in the process of referring it to specialists who can deal with it and uncover any issues. That then will take us back. I mean, the investigation will then either confirm or deny any concerns, and then in audit reports in later years and financial statements will reflect the reality of the situation of what actually is going on the ground. I hope in that manner, by responding to that, I did respond to your question on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and to clarify Treasury Regulation 8.4.1. Irregular expenditure of 23 million rand, which was incurred at CEDA, and why this resulted in a qualified opinion. The audit of the financial statements, so when you're concluding an opinion on the financial statements, those opinions are, and is an unqualified opinion, which means that the financial statements are correct, they fairly present. Then you get a qualified opinion. A qualified opinion means that there's a number that's wrong in the financial statements, or there are a few numbers that are incorrect in the financial statements. So although irregular expenditure might have been incurred at CEDA, it is correctly disclosed in the financial statements. So it is appropriately disclosed in the financial statements, and the punishment to CEDA came in the form of the non-compliance paragraph that was reported in the audit report. It talks about non-compliance with supply chain management prescripts and the specific regulation that's named there. So, as long as the number is appropriately or correctly and completely included in the financial statements, then there's no reason for me to qualify the financial statements and make a statement to say, because the qualification says that it says that the financial statements fairly present except for a certain number. So if I can explain it better, if revenue wasn't correctly reflected, if it was supposed to reflect an amount of 5 million rand in the financial statements, but it reflects an amount of 1 million rand, then I would qualify you because the number is incorrect. So the opinion is based on the numbers in the financial statements. Okay? So the irregular expenditure of CEDA is disclosed in the financial statement. There's a specific note in the financial statements where you will see the irregular expenditure disclosed. So the Treasury regulations and the PFMA require you to disclose the amount of irregular expenditure, the nature of the irregular expenditure, and the steps taken to address the irregular expenditure. So this is how I can conclude on the irregular expenditure aspect. I understand irregular expenditure is a big negative. Okay, but that negative doesn't result in a qualified audit opinion, but it results in some sort of a non-compliance. Mpumalanga, the fraud activities there, it will, the investigation, my understanding is that it's still to be approved, should cover the concerns that were raised in your report. And we'll make it specifically available to the investigation team, the Mpumalanga report in your site visits and the outcome of your site visits. With regards to the minister's commitments, the intention of the slide was to put in here the status of the commitments by the minister, whatever the minister has committed to us, but it's commitments that the minister makes to us as the auditor general in addressing the audit outcome. We are going to engage the minister. We are yet to engage the minister this year, but we are going to engage the minister, and it's important for us to do this, to brief the minister on the audit outcome, which is the audit report, and explain to her what we've identified during the audit. And from there, we would either propose commitments or get commitments from the minister, which would then in future years then reflect in this document. I think we've come to a point now where we understand, where everyone now understands what the concerns are in this portfolio. I think we also now have a world-class methodology that can support what we need to do. Okay? So we're at the point where we've started. It's not as if the incentive issues, the fraud issues with regards to the incentives have not been addressed at all. It is coming through now. It does reflect in the audit report. There is an investigation or an investigation that will take place. Okay? The auditing of CIFA is an expectation that us as an audit office perform the audit. We engage with, yeah. So what happens is this, although the audit is conducted by a private audit firm, there is some monitoring responsibilities that I have over the audit of CIFA. Fully again, I understand that you spoke about the loan book of a high amount of bad debts, that a high percentage of the loans are not recoverable. As long as that is properly disclosed and reflected in the financial statement, so you might have borrowed R1 million, and you don't expect that money back, but you reflect a debtor of only R100,000, which you might expect back. That is correctly reflected in the financial statements and won't result in a qualified or opinion. As long as the numbers are correct in the financial statements, I think there would be disclosures in the financial statements which will reflect such a thing. Such things like impairments, right? Impairments of debtors and all, they are reflected in the financial statements. As long as the numbers are correct, there won't be a move towards a negative audit outcome. My understanding is it's possible, it's possible and clear that these are, and I know it is reflected in the financial statements of CIFA. With regards to CEDA, CEDA's audit outcomes are actually reflected in this slide. It's the only one that's not in such detail. CEDA is an audit that is conducted by myself, and the audit outcome of CEDA is reflected. It's an unqualified audit opinion with findings on compliance. There were no material findings on performance information. There was one non-compliance, and that was the appointment of a service provider. Chairperson, I think I've tried to address the queries. I'm not sure if I missed anything.
Thank you. I just want to pick on to follow up on your responses. And on the questions that have been asked by my colleagues. The portfolio committee, the first thing that I want to ask is whether the Office of the Auditor General reads oversight reports of portfolio committees, and to be specific, did the Office of the Auditor General read the oversight report of the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development, particularly the one to Mpumalanga? And there is a Free State one coming. The second question that I want to ask, which relates to that, is that the Portfolio Committee approached the Office of the Auditor General after observing possible fraud in the CIS of the department and also in CIFA, in relation to loans to cooperatives. And we engaged with the Office of the Auditor General, and our request and the consultation was, is it possible for the Office of the Auditor General to assist the Portfolio Committee to further investigate what we have seen And in that meeting, the Office of the Auditor General agreed and said, yes, we can assist the Portfolio Committee, but we don't have funding to do that. If you are requesting us to assist, you will have to provide funding, which is what we then did after that consultation. We approached the office of the House chairperson, who is responsible for committees, and we motivated for being assisted, and we reported that this is what we saw, and we have consulted with the Office of the Auditor General, this is what they are saying. And the House chairperson agreed in principle and said, we are going to look for funding and assist you. I'm talking here the Portfolio Committee, not the department. Portfolio Committee. It's the Portfolio Committee that is providing oversight to the department. Now, in your audit report on slide number 10, under governance, on risk management, on internal audit, on audit committee, there is a concern on risk management, which is picked up by the Office of the Auditor General in terms of this report. But in terms of the internal audit and audit committee, it's good. Now, on the same day that we were dealing with this report, Yase Mpumala, the reaction between CIFA and the department has not been the same. CIFA immediately instituted an internal audit, came back to the Portfolio Committee with a report of a forensic investigation, which confirmed what the Portfolio Committee had already identified. The department's internal audit does not pick that up. Doesn't pick anything up. In terms of this report, it's okay. It's good. But then, I want to address this issue of the CIS. It doesn't start now with the establishment of this department in 2014. It started way back when this function was under DTI. If then the audit was done correctly, why was this not picked up all these years? This report of the Auditor General is contradicting itself. In one slide, you are saying you have identified these problems that the Portfolio Committee has seen. But in slide 10, you are saying there's nothing wrong with the internal audit committee of the department. So this then creates a problem, because the unit in the department that has to pick up these problems is the internal audit It doesn't. The Office of the Auditor General picks it up outside and puts it in this report. In the very same report, the Office of the Auditor General is praising the Audit Committee of the Department. Can you respond to that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the AG, as we audit this part of the audit, we consider any information which comes to our attention. So if there's any report from the oversight committees, from yourself, from the portfolio committee, anything in the newspapers, any requests for specific investigation, that information is considered as part of the audit process. The report on Mpumalanga was considered as part of the audit process. But remember that the auditor's responsibilities, and it's clearly outlined in our engagement letters and in the normal and it's standard audit, that the auditor's responsibility in terms of fraud. The auditor doesn't have any responsibilities in terms of fraud. If fraud is an intentional misrepresentation, it's something which is concealed. It's sometimes where people are working together with this here. My responsibility in terms of fraud, if I...
Fraud, people are able to commit fraud and corruption because of weak systems. If I want to be specific, this is what is happening in the department and CIFA. Instead of the money given to the applicant, the cooperative, the money is given to the service provider before the service provider even supplies what it is paid for. And to allow that corruption to happen, there is then no monitoring system. So the service provider takes the money and do whatever the service provider would want to do. The money doesn't reach to the person it is intended for. That is what is happening. The department is paying for quotation. It's not paying for service provided by the service provider. The quotation from the service provider is what makes the department to release money and pay the service provider with no checks and balances. Is that according to the PFMA? That is the question. So, fraud and corruption is able to take place because the systems are weak and designed to actually make that happen. And in this report, you are also confirming that, what we saw. Some of the service providers are not there. Some of the cooperatives are not there. In some instances, the cooperatives would say, these were the companies that we took quotations from. But the official from the department came with a different service provider. And imposed that service provider to us. Our understanding is that the Office of the Auditor General is the custodian of the PFMA. Explained to us here that way of funding SMMEs and cooperatives is a correct way. It is according to the PFMA that a service provider would be paid on the basis of quotations. And having done so, There will still be no monitoring and evaluation performed by the department, and then the department will still get a clean audit. The audit committee of the department would still get.
Chairperson, there's two things here. The assessment of internal audits in the audit committee is based on us doing a check if they fulfill their responsibilities in terms of the PFMA, and those were the straightforward responsibilities. Do they have audit plans in place? Do they fulfill the audit plan? Are they fully capacitated? But I hear where you're coming from. I can see where you're coming from. There's gross concerns, there's issues with the incentives, payments made to the cooperatives, there's falsified quotations, all of these things exist. Internal audit, the audit committees haven't identified these kind of issues. My assessment and my requirement was to assess them based on their responsibilities in terms of the PFMA, but quite in a cold manner, just to see if they had a plan in place, if they met four times a year, all of those different requirements. But I hear where you're coming from, and I think that's something that we must take into account going forward. Must definitely be concerned.
So meeting four times a year, is more important than understanding how the department monitors the 100 million rand. So the Office of the Auditor General will not be worried as to whether the department has got systems in place to monitor where the 100 million would be going to. But the main focus would be whether the department meets four times a year. Am I hearing you correctly?
Chairperson, our assessment over the payment of the incentives and the concern and the lack of internal controls and the deficiencies in the internal controls over the payment of incentives, over those two incentive payments, is addressed in the audit report. Through non-compliance with Treasury Regulation 8.4.1, which states that the department did not have adequate systems over and did not adequate controls over the monitoring and evaluation of the corporate incentive scheme and the PBSCB. It is covered in the audit report. That finding is raised, it's covered in the audit report. So all of the concerns, the Mpumalanga site visit, the concerns you've raised, the fact that there might be falsified quotations, that there might be collusion, all of these things is starting now. The initial step was to include a non-compliance in the audit report. It's now telling the department that you haven't complied. So the ball is now in the department's court. There's an investigation that has to take place. When closing off this audit, when finalizing this audit, within the last few weeks of July, once this finding was raised and this finding was put on the DC's table, the DG has already started taking action in this regard, and it was based on a finding raised by us, based on that same non-compliance with Treasury Regulation 8.4.1.
The point that I'm making is that slide number 10 contradicts slide number 13. Governance is part of that. Risk management would be systems in place to prevent fraud from happening. It's not only non-compliance that we're dealing with. We're dealing with how we prevent. Internal audit is systems in place in the internal audit committee which has got checks and balances for what is happening in other units of the department to ensure that there is no fraud and corruption that is taking place. And the point then that I'm making is that you can't have on slide number 10, green. And then on slide number 13, you raise all these issues. The report itself is contradictory. And all we are asking for, what is it that we have to take here as this portfolio committee in terms of controls and ensuring that there is no fraud and corruption that is taking place in the department? Based on the information that is on slide number 10 and slide number 13.
Chairman, I'll be repeating myself. In my assessment on slide number 10, based on audit outcome, based on what the internal audit and audit committee's responsibilities were in PFMA, I concluded in that light that they did fulfill their responsibilities, that they did achieve their charters, whatever they were set out to do for the year. That was my conclusion. That being said, the concerns with the incentive scheme, the concerns with the payment, I think it's about the way forward on this. Is, I mean, there's staff members were suspended, subsequent there's actions being taken by the DG. There's an investigation that will more potentially or most probably be conducted. And I think what the finding that was raised in the audit report is also a warning sign. It's also a warning to the DG of the need to step in controls in this environment. So I think it's late, but it's also early days. I think finally, I know this incentive is coming from the DTI, and this is also perpetuating now for many years, but I think we've reached a point now. I think we've reached a point now where something now can be done about this. I've engaged the DG over this numerous times now. I think there's commitment from the department side now that to address this concern, to address these concerns. The nature of the incentive schemes, the way the policies are written, the nature of it, it opens it up to fraud, it opens it up to corruption. So I'm assuming that as part of the investigation, the recommendation that might come out is to address all of these procedures, to address the policies, to change the system, something like that is going to come out. And then also to hold people accountable in this light, or in this manner. Chairman, that's how I understand how we concluded on the incentives and on the department's audit reports.
Before I get to Honorable Chan, which would then mean that slide number 10 is to some extent incorrect. Because if there are those loopholes, you can then say Governance is correct. Because putting those systems in place and ensuring that there are no leaks, the policy doesn't create a situation where fraud and corruption can take place, means that the governance part of it is weak. It can then get green. Honorable Charles and then the DG.
Chair, thanks. My reading of this particular point is that the Auditor General has not picked up potential irregularities that the department's internal audit has not picked up. In other words, the department picked up that there were some potential irregularities within the CIS. And to that extent, its governance and risk management systems are functioning. And these were highlighted by the Auditor General in its report. If the department had not picked up that there were problems and had not requested an investigation by the Auditor General, then I think the Auditor General would have been justified in flagging governance and risk management, not as green, but as red. But from what I understand, maybe I'm missing something, the department recognized itself that there were problems within those incentive schemes, which it then reported in its report, which we haven't read yet. But had it not done so, and you had found in your investigation that they had not done so, you would have red flagged it. Am I making myself clear?
Can I correct that statement? The department did not pick this up. This was picked up by the portfolio committee. It is on the report of the portfolio committee. Only after the portfolio committee had identified that, the department then also saw a need to look at this. It's not the department that picked this up. If the department had picked this up, it would have been reflected in the reports of the department presented to the portfolio committee. So, if the department only reacted to what was observed by the portfolio committee, then governance in the department cannot be reflected as green. Also to support the point that I'm making, before we even arrived at this, the portfolio committee in September last year asked the department to report on the 400 cooperatives that have been funded by the department. And the department said, we can't report. Report to us on the developmental status of the 400 cooperatives that you funded. And the department came back to us and said, we can't, we don't have the capacity, give us time. We gave the department time. The department has not yet reported on that, but we continue to do our work because our responsibility is oversight. We went on the field and we discovered what we discovered. We made a recommendation and only then the department. So the point I'm making, Honorable Chan, is that yes, the department said so, but after. After. And if the governance systems of the department were good in the manner in which this report, the audit report, is reflecting on slide number 10, it was not going to be the portfolio committee that identifies the problem. It was going to be the department that reports to the portfolio committee. That is the point I'm making. Did you?
Chair, my understanding of slide 10 is that the AG looks at the internal audit and audit functions and risk at all departments through a particular lens. And all of us are required to have strategic risk registers. And that then is reflected in the business plans of each of the units. It translates into operational risks that have to be managed at that level. So therefore, at the business unit level, that risk of fraud, and fraud risks are also identified and monitored at that level. So the internal audit function then prepares their 3-year and their 1-year internal audit plan based on that risk register. So for example, one of our strategic risks are where citizens don't understand or get, I don't know what the exact wording is, but it comes to citizens not understanding or having the benefit of the department's mandate. So part of the actions would then be a very robust communications plan and doing some of the things that from time to time the committee tells us we make suggestions about, such as when we've done our work to put up a signpost saying this was constructed by the department so one can see the footprint of the department or CEDA or CEPA for that matter. So internal audit is not a management function. They will then say, this is what you said you will do about that risk. Let me check whether your controls are in place. So, and then they give a very, very detailed report. So, for example, they found huge gaps in institutions, governments, and private in our communications function. And it then enables management to correct that. What the audit committee does is the audit committee receives those reports. We didn't have to make management commitments on what we will do to correct the things that the internal audit has found. The AG, the audit committee, has gone so far as to even convene special audit meetings where the managers themselves have to come and sit and explain, now these were the findings of internal audit, these were the findings of the AG. This is what you said you would do. Have you done it? So the suggestions that the AG makes here about the work, the oversight that the committee must, or we should, in our quarterly reports to the committee, speak to and give the committee the assurance on the that we're addressing the root causes of it. So I'm saying that my understanding is that is how they look at the internal audit as a function, a management support function, and the functions of the audit committee as a function that is prescribed in the PFMA. And that is what that rating is on. And so I think you the point is very well made that maybe those protocols should be changing because it doesn't really address the real issues of what difference is that making in terms of the delivery of the mandate and how the resources are applied. And then I just wanted to comment on the issue of ministerial commitments. I just want to check with Ahmed. My understanding is that based on the previous year's audit, last year this time, when the AG sat here, he could say that he had met with Minister. But because that was our first audit as the department, there were no findings and therefore there was no commitments required from Minister. So if we talk about there are no commitments, it was based on the fact that there were not particular things that they asked Minister to keep her eye on, to do something about in terms of her assurance. So then, whereas with the audit committee, there is a particular contract that agreement that AG has with the audit committee, and they come to those meetings as well. So I don't think if Ahmed wants to, Mr. Willow wants to rephrase that and just explain the issue of there are no ministerial commitments because there were no findings that required the minister's intervention.
Maybe that will clarify what is meant by this. But I want to address this issue of a question that was asked by Honorable Chan that says the mandate of the office of the Auditor General, if it doesn't look at the impact, whose responsibility then it is to look at the impact. And if the office of the Auditor General doesn't look at our oversight report and then also use that to determine the performance of the department, how does the work that we do, which focuses more on impact, is then related to the work that is done by the Office of the Auditor General? I'm asking this because most of the time, the DG would focus more on getting the clean audit. That's what they get worried, more worried about. And if then the clean audit doesn't take into account the impact of investment by government, on one hand, you know, we go out and we find people who are miserable, who are frustrated, who are crying. Service providers that have exploited them and ran away with money. That's what will be in our report. And then on this side, in the Auditor General's report, there will be good performance because the targets were met. Money that was budgeted for was spent. How do we marry this? Because at the end of the day, government from the perspective of the public is not measured in terms of getting clean audit. Government's performance in terms of the public is measured in terms of providing services that address their felt needs. And what is the issue at the moment in the public out there is corruption. High rate of unemployment, poverty, corruption. And the portfolio committee goes out there. Yes, they know how much was allocated, how many cooperatives or SMMEs were supported, but when you go there, down there, you don't find the impact of this investment. How do we correlate those two? Because the mandate of this department is not to get a clean audit only. The mandate of the department is to change the lives, the living conditions of the people by spending money that is allocated for their development accordingly. That is the mandate in our understanding of the department. Then in doing so, comply with the PFMA, meet the deadline. So the clean audit must also be accompanying the impact report. How do we change the Office of the Auditor General to look more on value for money as opposed to compliance only?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll assist Ahmed here if I can. From the Auditor General's side, we have a very specific mandate. And our mandate is clear to say we look at the financial statements, whether it's a fair presentation, we look at compliance and at the performance. So in executing our work, we want to give credibility in terms of the information that has been presented and disclosed. So whether the department or the entity report that they've underachieved, it's not for us to come in and to hold them accountable for the underachievement, but it is to give credibility to the information that is there, and that is what we've done in this process, is to say, yes, the department, or where there was irregular expenditure, it has been disclosed. Where there's underperformance, it is there. We could test it, we could see the evidence, and therefore we are bringing that information to the people and to the oversight structures that is responsible to look at the impact and to look at accountability and the consequences. So we will engage with the accounting officer, with the minister, with the portfolio committee to share our experiences, to share the supporting documentation and the evidence that we collated during this process, so that the structures and the people that are in those positions to hold accountable and to ensure consequences are empowered to do so. At the moment, and I mean when we look at it, clean audit outcome, we don't have a mandate to express on impact or on service delivery. There is a relationship, and I'm not sure if that accountability slide was here. I wasn't here when the presentation was done, but if we look at the accountability framework, we are saying that there should be a plan in terms of that the department has been entrusted with funds. There should be a plan in terms of how that should have been, what should be done and how it should be dealt with. Then there should be controls in place to make sure that there is monitoring, oversight, reconciliation, documentation, and that's the day-to-day activities that should be there. If that is in place, I mean the oversight is coming in, the assurance providers is coming in. We provide feedback in terms of the gaps that has been identified. And then if there's accountability, the gap should be closed through consequence management. And all of this is done, there should be better audit outcomes. And then the last step will be better service providing, better impact. So we don't express on that, but we're saying if everything is in place and if the control environment is a strong control environment and all the monitoring is there and all the consequence management is there, then it should result in money spent for the intended purposes. But from where we're sitting at the AG's office, it's not our mandate. Our mandate is very clear on the three areas that I've expressed. And that is where we report on. And by giving that information, we trust that it will also enable the next steps. Chairperson, and while I do have the mic on, maybe I also just want to reflect on the investigation. I was part of the, or I was there with the meeting when we discussed the investigation, and yes, I did say that we are more than willing to assist and that we can assist in terms of the investigation. And there was two things that we discussed on the day. The one was there must be a formal request because we do have our own processes. So we need to get that formal request, and then the second one is there needs to be some funding. So what I do understand is that the funding has been secured, but we need that formal request. And the only person within the AG that can approve the investigation is the Auditor General himself. So once we get that request, we will empower the Auditor General to make the decision in terms of approving the requested investigation. I think there was also a question to say, well, when we look at the regularity audit and the outcome that is here, will it make a difference to get in the AG to do an investigation? And I want to say yes. There's a vast difference between a regularity audit with the mandate as explained it now compared to investigation. Investigation is very specific skilled forensic auditors. They're skilled to go in and do an investigation. They do a thorough review. They zoom into documentation that is there, into processes, compared to a regularity audit that has a different approach and a different objective. So I want to give you the comfort that if the investigation is approved, it's a total different process with a total different focus area. It's a fact-finding process to see whether allegations of fraud, corruption, if there's evidence to support that. So I would recommend that once, as the funding has been approved or preliminary approved, to continue with the request, and so that we can propose it to the AG, so that we can get our specialists in to do that investigation.
Honourable Chan, I'm going to respond to that later. Honourable Chan.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you for that clarification. I think that's very encouraging that funding has been approved within the Auditor General's office itself, it seems. You're shaking your head.
Okay. That's why I wanted to respond, because I think that I want to clarify what the request was. The request to the Office of the House Chairperson, let me say this, in our budget, there was no item on forensic investigation on possible fraud in CIS and CIFA lending. There wasn't that item. So the budget of the portfolio committee doesn't have that. Then in conducting our oversight, we identify this need. And we then take a decision that we need to further investigate. We then look at two things. Do we have the capacity? And we say, no, we don't. Which of the Chapter 9 institutions can help us? And we discuss two options. One option is the public protector, and the second option is the Auditor General. We choose to go with the Office of the Auditor General. Reason being that it is the office that is also responsible for auditing. And if what we have seen can also be further investigated by them, it may help also in reviewing even the mandate of the Office of the Auditor General to include a situation where it can be detected in any stages where the systems are weak in such a way that they can make it possible for corruption and fraud to take place. That is what made us to choose the Office of the Auditor General as opposed to the Public Protector. Then the committee said, Chairperson, go and then ask Parliament to allow us to do this and also to provide us with funding. Then the person responsible for committees in Parliament is the House Chairperson. Then the House Chairperson is approached, given all the information, the report about Mpumalanga and the resolution of the Portfolio Committee and the engagement of the Portfolio Committee with the Office of the Auditor General. Now, when the chairperson goes to the House Chairperson, there are two requests now. The first one, allow us to do further investigation assisted by the Office of the Auditor General. The second request, we have engaged with the Office of the Auditor General. They say, yes, they can do the work, but they don't have the budget. We also don't have the budget. Then the House Chairperson goes through everything, then calls me back. Yes, we agree that you can go ahead with the further investigation. It will help us to tighten systems and ensure that there is no fraud, there is no corruption, and the money is spent for what it was budgeted for. However, at this moment, we don't have funding. We will wait for the medium-term expenditure framework, and when we are allocated money in the pool, we will then ask you to sit with the Office of the Auditor General so that they can give you an indication of how much budget is required. So there was no way that there was going to be an approval of a budget to do work where there's been no terms of reference and there's been no budget estimate, which was then going to release the funding. So what has been agreed is, yes, we support you, we allow you to further investigate through the Office of the Auditor General, we will give you money when money is available. That's where we are.
Chair, it seems to me that there's a bit of a parallel process happening here, that the Auditor General has been approached by the department to do an audit, whilst at the same time you've been approaching the House Chair to commission an audit on behalf of the committee. So the question is, if an audit's done by the Auditor General's office, whether it's commissioned by the department or the committee, does it make any difference to the audit? Now, bearing in mind that you're a professional organisation, it shouldn't make any difference. Now, my view is, let us have a discussion with the Office of the Auditor General to make sure that the terms of reference that have been agreed between itself and the department are what we as a committee also agree to, and that the request comes from the committee as well as the department to get the job done. I mean, for us to have to wait now for further funds to be available, blah, 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 it sounds like we're really, you know, going around in circles. So my view is that we should just make sure that the terms of reference are conforming with the, or at least both terms of reference are basically singing off the same hymn sheet, and then we go ahead. Just coming back to the point that I made earlier and that you touched on, you know, in a democracy, there should be checks and balances to make sure that institutions, both private institutions and public institutions, fulfill their duties. And, you know, we've heard it quite clearly from the Auditor General's office that its mandate is very specific. It's a technical mandate which relates to the performance of certain financial standards which are laid out, amongst other things, within the King Code, which focused on conformance as opposed to performance. Now, that information is useful for us as a committee to perform our oversight role, to make sure that not just conformance, but performance is achieved by the department over which we have oversight responsibility. Part of the role of the executive through the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation is to do that oversight of the executive. Ultimately, it's in the hands of the people. It's in the hands of voters to determine whether a government is delivering on its mandate or not. And, you know, that's why we live in a democracy. We can't be in a situation where accountability is forever shrouded in, you know, mysterious political machinations which don't give the power to the people. Ultimately, in the democracy, the power must rest with the people. Our job as a committee, as far as we are able, is to do our job and to then report back to the parliamentary structures, debate the issues on the floor of the House, and get the members of Parliament to vote. And if we don't do our job as members of Parliament to get the department to do its job, then we only have ourselves to blame as members of Parliament. Members of Parliament have to do their job to make sure that the executive is held to account. And that is our purpose in life.
What I explained here is a resolution that is in the report of a portfolio committee that was adopted by the portfolio committee and adopted by Parliament. The issue of the portfolio committee doing further investigation. If the department has approached the Office of the Auditor General for the same, to do the same work, it can, that decision of a portfolio committee cannot be changed in this meeting. It's a decision that is in the report of a portfolio committee adopted by the portfolio committee and then adopted by the House. House Chair approached, agreed. And it's not a circle. Because we should differentiate here the work of the department and the work of the portfolio committee. The department doesn't account to itself, it accounts to Parliament. So the decision that was taken by the portfolio committee has more to do with the portfolio committee holding the department accountable. And in here, members who are here today can't take that decision and rescind a decision of a portfolio committee and say, no, let's do a joint investigation. That is not the decision that was taken by the portfolio committee, which was then put to Parliament and adopted by Parliament. That's the only thing that we differ on, Honourable Chan. We are only differing on the how to take this process forward. And the point that I'm making is that let us not come out of this meeting thinking that we have resolved now that we will do a joint investigation. If that has to happen, it will have to go back to the portfolio committee, and the portfolio committee adopted that position.
Chair, from what I understand, the lady, sorry, your name I've forgotten, sorry, Paula. Okay, Cornet, said is that they request, they need a formal request. That's what they want. They've already got the money. Let's send a formal request. As the portfolio committee.
Honourable Chair, Parliament is a different structure from a department. There is already a parliamentary resolution which cannot be changed on the basis of the department having approached the office of the audit general, of the auditor general. That parliamentary resolution, if it was to be changed to go this route, we'll then have to come back here, and then we take it to Parliament and we say we are rescinding, we are taking this route.
Where is Parliament's resolution? I haven't seen it. This committee has not had that confirmed to it.
Honourable Chance, we have that in our report, which we debated in Parliament.
But have we had the House Chair's allocation of budget? We haven't. So all I'm saying is, the budget's been approved by the Auditor General. Why do we have to go any further?
You don't understand the process. Let us not debate here, because it means you don't understand the process. Let us leave this topic, because it has more to do with separation of powers. Are there any further questions related to this, to the presentation by the Office of the Auditor General? If there are no further questions, I will give an opportunity to Mr. Moller to round up, and then I will come in to close the meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I've covered whatever I wanted to say in my presentation and in the queries I'd like to address. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. We meet again tomorrow here to receive a report from the department and the entity. Thank you. I declare the meeting closed.